This is Decimator Vault, and you're listening to Guildcast. Protect me. The walls are falling down. Protect me. They're crawling out of sight. Protect me. I'm left standing alone, holding out my hands. Will you take hold and protect me?
Hey everyone, welcome back to this 82nd episode of Guildcast for September 30th, 2007. I'm your host, Sean. Yeah, you remember me, right? Your old pal, Sean? That podcasting guy? Yeah, okay, so it's been a while, but this time I can't really blame my job that much as the fact that I just wanted to play Eye of the North. I'm really loving this expansion so far, but, you know, I'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. The theme for this episode is actually the Monk Class Revisited. If you remember, quite a while ago we had a Monk Class episode with Loudon Swain and Lady Sinea and I on Skype. Well, we did that same formula again, but this time we talked about the changes to the monk since last time, and we mixed it up with some protection prayers talk, and then we have some farming a la Swain, and the general goofiness you can expect from getting the three of us together recording late on a Saturday night. The people who asked to be mentioned this week include Rand Fueler, Ryko Dragon, Anime Hero, and El Diablo Ranger. So there's been quite a bit of news lately, which is pretty normal for the weeks following the release of a major new chapter, or in this case, an expansion. So on September 27th, there was a pretty big update, the biggest one so far. So let's just start with the easy stuff. An Imperial Herald may now be found in the Great Temple of Balthazar. Players may consult the Herald for details about the Guild Wars Bonus Mission Pack promotion, which is active now through noon Pacific Standard Time on October 31st, 2007, so it gives you about a month. The Imperial Herald will periodically have new topics and announcements to share as well. Several new encounters are available now from Captain Langmar relating to the new Ebon Vanguard Special Ops quest. Players who have rescued Captain Langmar from the Char Flame Legion can find her in Grothmar Wardowns, just outside of Long Eye's Ledge. Captain Langmar can provide a Char Battle Plan decoder for use with encrypted Char Battle Plans. Successfully decrypted plans can then be brought back to Captain Langmar in order to launch a Special Ops encounter. To help counteract undesirable PvP behavior, a Dishonorable Combatant system has been added to the game, and a series of arena time limit changes has been put into effect as well. In addition to these measures, ArenaNet will be evaluating a new report command feature from September 28th to the 30th, which is actually today, after which it will be disabled pending further testing. So first there's this report command, where players can use the /report or /report name to report other players for inappropriate or antisocial behavior. I guess antisocial, that means if you see a player standing in the corner, not talking to anyone, you can report them? Of course not, no. Targeting a player and typing /report, followed by a player's name, will open a new report dialog panel. From this panel, you can report a chosen player for leeching, botting, spamming, using abusive language, or having an inappropriate character name. Reports will then be relayed and reviewed by the Guild Wars support team. You can report a player for leeching if you're in the same random arena, alliance battle, or competitive mission is that player. If at least half of your team reports the same player for leeching, that player will be stripped of experience points and faction rewards for that battle. You can also see the Dishonorable Combatant System section on the GuildWars.com website for more details, but note that you can only report members of your own party or team for leeching. So if you see someone else in another group, like an alliance battle, that's leeching, you can't report them. Reports of botting, spamming, abusive language, and inappropriate character names will be relayed to and reviewed by the Guild Wars support team. But note that reporting a single player multiple times for the same offense will not expedite or influence support team attention. A single account cannot use the /report command more than 50 times in a 24-hour period, which is kind of a lot. Then they have the Dishonorable Combatant system. To discourage experience and faction leeching, intentional stalling of arena matches and leaving matches in random arena, alliance battles, the Jade Quarry, and Fort Aspenwood before they are complete, a dishonorable combatant penalty system has been put into effect. Dishonor points affect game types that have randomly formed teams such as random arenas, alliance battles, and competitive missions. An account may be given dishonor points for leaving a PvP match prematurely, for leeching experience or faction, or for falsely reporting teammates for leeching. Players who leave a PvP match prematurely will receive 5 dishonor points. If a player is reported for leeching, that player will receive 2 dishonor points for each report against him. Players who report a team member for leeching without a third of their team also reporting that player will also receive 2 dishonor points. So there you go. You can't just run around reporting everyone, because you will actually get the dishonor points as well. An account that has accumulated 10 or more dishonor points is given the dishonorable status, which is displayed as a buff icon on the screen. While affected by this status, no characters present on that account may enter any PvP missions. The dishonorable status remains in effect for 1 minute for each accumulated dishonor point. This status cannot be removed by logging out or changing characters. When the duration of the dishonorable status has expired, characters on that account may once again join PvP missions. Dishonor points will remain on the player's account for a total of 60 minutes. If further dishonor points are acquired during this period, that account is once again given the dishonorable status, though for a longer period this time. To clear dishonor points from an account, a player must go 60 minutes without accumulating any new dishonor points. So basically, you could be a total jerk and you'll get a couple points of dishonor. And if you get 10 of these, you will be punished by not being able to play any PvP missions on that account for a total of 60 minutes. So you got an hour. Personally, I don't think this is enough. I think they should do like a public beheading or something like that. Yeah, who's with me? Anyway, on to the rest of the news. They have the arena time limit changes. To discourage players from deliberately trying to prolong team arena and random arena matches unnecessarily, the following changes are now in effect. Standard Annihilation matches now have a time limit of 8 minutes. Priest Annihilation matches now have a time limit of 12 minutes. When the match's designated time limit expires, the team with the highest total morale will be declared the winner. In Priest Annihilation maps, if both teams have equal morale but only one team has a live priest, the team with the priest will be declared the winner. If neither of these tiebreakers applies, both teams will lose the match. Now, on to the revised Gladiator title. This here is a topic that many PvPers are not too happy about, let's just say. With the introduction of the Dishonorable Combatant system, ArenaNet has made some changes to the Gladiator title track that will make it more reasonable for average players to attain the track's titles. In the new system, ArenaNet has multiplied the number of Gladiator points required for each title rank by 4, and Gladiator points will now be earned in the following increments. Players will now receive 1 Gladiator point for every 5 wins in an arena. Each additional 5 wins after the initial point is earned will give players an added bonus Gladiator point. Thus, players also earn 2 Gladiator points for their 10th consecutive win, 3 Gladiator points for their 15th consecutive win, and 4 Gladiator points for their 20th consecutive win. And the Gladiator point bonus is capped at the maximum of 4 bonus points. So that means that players who continue to be victorious after 20 consecutive wins are completely awesome. Oh, no. They will also continue to earn 4 Gladiator points each time they win 5 additional matches. To compensate for the adjusted difficulty of the Gladiator title, adjusted meaning lowered, players' current Gladiator points and Gladiator title ranks will be adjusted. All current Gladiator points totals will be multiplied by 6. So that means basically if a player has rank 5 of the Gladiator title with 350 Gladiator points, well, now that player will have a rank 6 with 2100 Gladiator points. So you just got a promotion for no reason. And then there were the inevitable bug fixes during this update, mostly to do with graphic glitches, continuity errors, and things like that. But a few of the improvements are pretty noteworthy, so I thought I'd just mention them here. Like the fact that they made it so that players who attain rank 8 in the Allegiance title tracks of Eye of the North may now receive a veteran buff when they speak to a bounty NPC. These buffs do not give reputation points, but instead award an allegiance bonus every 25 kills. And the Elixir of Valor now grants a 10% morale boost to the entire party. Also, players will now receive notification when they have successfully completed the requirements for the time attack or boss bounty hunt challenges. Also, killing bosses in Eye of the North now grants bonus points towards the Ebon Vanguard, Norn, Asura, and Dwarven title tracks. Now, as I mentioned, I've been able to actually play a pretty good bit of Eye of the North these last few weeks. Some people have asked me to give an updated opinion on the game so far, so I'm going to go ahead and do that, but I wanted to mention that this might contain some spoilers for those of you who don't have Eye of the North yet, so just be advised of that. Well, let's see. First of all, I love this expansion. I'm still loving this expansion. My mind hasn't changed there, but one thing my mind has changed on is I take back what I said about the Asuran lands not being that great, because, oh my god, this whole Jurassic Park thing is amazing with the dinosaurs and all that. Holy crap. In fact, you know, I haven't really come across one area yet that I don't just absolutely love. In the other parts of the previous chapters, there were always those areas that I didn't really care for. You know, I didn't hate them. Well, a couple of them I did, but I, like in Prophecies, there was the parts of the Fire Island chain, mostly where the Mersat lived. And then, of course, in Factions, there was the whole Kynang City area, which I think I've said that how much I hate those quite a few times. In Nightfall, it was pretty much everything after the Gate of Desolation. But in Eye of the North, I haven't found anything yet. And it might just be the fact that it's new still, and, you know, I'm so excited by the newness of it. And I'm sure some of the areas will get old after a while, especially after all the title point grinding, you know, going through the same area over and over again. But so far, I really love it. I just think it's really done really well. And a good testament to this, I guess, would be, you know, a lot of the areas I didn't like before, like the Gate of Desolation and things like that, were kind of like the destroyed areas, you know, the aftermath type areas, or just extreme craziness, you know. I wasn't really into that much. But an area that's kind of an example of this in Eye of the North is the Burning Forest area in the Sacnoth Valley, down in it's like the southeastern corner of the Sacnoth Valley, where you got all those burning spirits, which are just, oh, I hate those things. And you go down there, and it looks amazing. Absolutely amazing. I mean, the woods are burning. You know, there's like charcoaled fire inside of each tree, and you know, there's the heat waves, which they've done this now with the fire, like in campfires and torches and all this stuff. They have like the distorted heat waves above the fire, which is really cool. They've done that. The fire itself looks amazing now. It must be some new thing that they figured out how to do, so they threw it everywhere. But I think it's really cool. It's really, really good area. And that whole area down there is just really, really beautiful. Of course, there have been some gripes from people, including on the main forums. There's actually a lot. And then on my forums, there's been a few, and just some gripes from friends that I've played with. And most of these have to do with the tidal point grinding for armor, and then there's also the lackluster of the Hall of Monuments. Well, I've addressed the point grinding thing before, and actually Jenna and I talked about it in my other podcast, in Oh My God Real Life, in the last episode. But we talked a little bit about the grinding and how a lot of people are really upset about it. I personally, I don't love it, of course, but I don't really think that it's a big deal, because I believe, you know, if you want to work towards a goal, then you should work towards it, and you should be rewarded for working towards that goal. That's just the way I see that. But now, as far as the Hall of Monuments deal, I think the whole point is for it to just be plain when you first see it, you know? You want to spruce it up when you see it, you know? You want to throw some banners in there and some statues, right? I mean, that's the whole point. The only gripe I really share with a lot of these people is the fact that the customization of mini pets to a character when they're displayed in the hall, I think, is kind of dumb. But, you know, then again, I don't really see a way around this, because you could just borrow mini pets from your friends, and then you could have this really sweet monument by basically just borrowing stuff. But I think what they should do, maybe the only alternative, is maybe customize it for your account instead of your character. So that way, you'd still be able to do that where you switch it, you know, you give all your mini pets to one character in the account and he has an awesome monument for mini pets. And you give them all to your next character and he has the same awesome whatever. I don't know, maybe they need to think of some other way to do this, because I think customizing it to that character is kind of screwed up. So, you know, we'll see what they do with that. Anyway, there's been some major gripes also from the hardcore PvPers regarding the lack of elites and the continued nerfing of HA. And also this dishonor system that I just talked about. Everybody hates that. The Gladiator title track change also is huge. But it's really stirring up a lot of the PvP players, and it's kind of turning a lot of them off to PvP altogether. What I'd like to do is, not for a whole show, maybe a little segment, just get somebody on here, a hardcore PvPer, to talk about their gripes and just the things that they don't like about you know, the changes to PvP lately. Because I know it's really a sore subject with a lot of PvPers, and a lot of them are just really getting sore on the state of PvP right now. So I have a few people in mind I'd like to talk to, maybe get this going, excuse me. You know, we'll see how that goes. Anyway, I also wanted to point out that I probably won't have an entire show just on Eye of the North. Like somebody asked me that the other day about having just a whole show on Eye of the North. I don't really want to do that, because what I want to do is, like I've always done, I want to do sections of this expansion. Like I've always done sections of chapters, you know, like certain aspects of it. Like I had a hero show after Nightfall came out. I didn't have a whole Nightfall show. I just have, you know, certain aspects of that chapter talked about in a theme for each episode. So I'm going to do that. And in fact, next week, the theme for the episode will be dungeons, which is a new thing with Gwen. So I'll talk about dungeons next week, so you can look forward to that. That should be an interesting show for the moderate to the advanced player, I think. So now, on to the other game news. There was a new Halloween contest that's up now. This is now the third year for this contest. And what they want you to do is mix Guild Wars with Halloween and document it somehow. Like last year, I think the winner was a person who dressed up like a ritualist and then took a picture of it. I mean, extremely well done. They had everything down to the tattoos and the jar of ashes. They had everything. It really, really amazing. So they want you to do something like that. You know, you could carve a pumpkin. You can decorate your house. You can do something on the computer. You can draw something. Anything relating to Guild Wars and Halloween. So if you're interested in doing something like that, you can go ahead and check it out. There's more details about it on the GuildWars.com main page, and that'll show you also the prizes you can win. There's some autographed copies of Eye of the North and some other great prizes. There's some mini pet codes too, which is really cool. So do that. The deadline for that is October 15th. So enough of that, enough of the news and my rambling on about Eye of the North. Let's go ahead and play the Skype recording I did with Loudon Swain and Lady Sinea. Listening endlessly to your words. We're here with another of the Monk episodes. This is number 2, The Monk Revisited. And I brought Loudon Swain and Lady Sinea back to talk about a lot of the things that we didn't get to talk about in the first Monk episode, which is ages ago. And a lot has happened since then, and that, in addition to the things that we didn't get to talk about, should make a nice little conversation this time. So, say hi, Loudon. Say hi to all your Loudon.
Hi, Loudon.
Well, hi, Loudon. And as you heard, we have Lady Sinea with us also, or also known as Lady Sienna. We'll just start out with some of the things we didn't cover last time. And I guess the biggest, you know, glaring omission was the protection prayers. Like on the first one, we talked a lot about healing prayers. We went over that a lot. We talked about a little bit about the weapons that we use for, you know, the best wand offhand and the best staff and everything. But we didn't really touch on the protection spells that much. So you guys want to get into that a little bit?
Sure.
Well, Loudon's been playing Prot a lot recently, right?
Yeah, mostly. I think we didn't talk about protection a whole lot because last time we did this, it was just prophecies, and mm-hmm. in prophecies, you could just brute force out-heal most of the bad guys, and it seems like they got a lot tougher with factions and Nightfall, and even to a certain extent, Gwen, and there's a lot more need for Prot now to negate damage because you can't just overpower it.
Yeah.
Basically, most of the time when I run Prot, I run the standard ZB build that pretty much everyone who runs ZB Prot runs, because you get a decent amount of healing with it, and you also get either throw in a Prot Spirit or a Spirit Bond to negate damage when you're up against heavy-hitting elementalists and things like that. It's really important to be able to cancel out some of that, you know, 150, 200-point damage they're going to do, knocking it down to 40 or 50 really extends your survivability. And then with ZB, you get a decent, oh, I don't have it in front of me right now, 130-ish healing, and that's without any points in healing because it's a prot-based heal spell, so that one's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I run that one. That's why I run it a lot, because I'm still a healer at heart, so I think that way.
And for those who don't know what ZB is...
Zealous Benediction.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should go on
Wiki. I've been... Yeah.
If you don't know what ZB is, this episode won't help you. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
I've been running just a really simple Boon Prot on Tal'Kora, and she seems to use it really well.
What energy management do you have her run?
Some Mesmer skill.
Awesome. Like Mantra?
Yeah.
This show is going to be super insightful.
Yeah.
When are we going to talk about farming?
Let's get all the other stuff out of the way first. So then, like you said, you know, protection spells have gotten a little bit more cred now with since the last time we did the show, you know, because I didn't realize we did it before factions. I guess we did, though. So there's factions, Nightfall and Eye of the North, to contend with now since the last show.
No, factions was out, because I think that was the weekend we talked about the elite missions or something.
Oh.
Yeah, but we totally hated factions, so we didn't really talk about it.
How about as far as the spells, the newest spells since the last episode? Are there any... I mean, I'm sure there are some that you've replaced in your builds to be more effective than the ones that were in prophecies. But how about in the last few, in Nightfall and in Eye of the North? Are there any really glaring skills that you see?
I heart Seed of Life.
Yeah, Seed of Life is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Even after the nerf, it's still pretty good. It's great when you're running a bonder, because you put it on the bonder, and then pretty much anytime anyone takes damage, it fires. So you get massive group healing for 5 seconds or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pretty much. I never used to bond either, same as Prot. It wasn't really needed most of the time. But again, with the heavy hitters and stuff, if you're in areas without a lot of enchant stripping, then bonding can be a really effective form of protection. So what I usually run is just I put Balths on myself, so anytime anyone takes damage, part of that comes back to me, so I get energy every time there's damage on anybody. So, and that's really the key. And then I put Life Bond on everybody, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then I run Mantra of Inscriptions so that my signets recharge faster. And then basically you spam Blessed Signet so that you get back energy for every enchant you are maintaining. So you get 20 plus energy every 10 seconds when you're spamming that signet. Mm-hmm. And as far as the other four skills, it's just kind of take what you like. I usually take Spirit Bond, so I can put it on myself, because if you're getting hit with heavy damage, you need some healing, and I've found that with Prot Spirit, you know, it does 10%, or it protects me, so I only take 10% damage, but if you got a whole bunch of aggro on you doing heavy damage, 10 hits can go by in just a second or two, so I like Spirit Bond, because you actually get some healing out of it. Mm-hmm. And then I also like to take Blessed Light as my elite, because it clears a hex and a condition, and also heals for about 100 to 120, depending on what your divine favor is set to. So that one's pretty sweet, multi-purpose. You're taking care of condition of hex and healing all at the same time. And then, as we talked about, I take Seed of Life, just because that skill is awesome. And then Res of Preference, not Rebirth Bonding, because energy is important. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when I'm the bonder, I usually try to be the guy who does the mid-combat rezzing, because you're not really doing a whole lot. You know, you're just at the occasional Blessed Light or Seed of Life, but you actually a lot of times are the least busy person, so you can do that rez in the middle of all of the heavy stuff coming down.
Hey, it takes a lot of effort to hit Mantra of Inscriptions and Blessed Signet over and over again.
True. Henshis can't do it, so there's obviously some level of skill there.
Now, you mentioned about the rezes. Did we talk about that in the first one? Like the importance of when to bring what type of rez for a monk?
We talked about what rez we like best, I think. But we didn't talk about what rez is better than any other.
Because I think that's a good idea. That should be something we should talk about, because a lot of times people don't understand, like, in certain situations that you need to bring different rezes, you know.
Yeah. Well, personally, I like rebirth only when it seems probable that someone is going to die in the middle of aggro, so you're going to need to pull them out of there. Mm-hmm. I really don't like rebirth because it takes your energy down to zero, and it takes forever to recharge. Mm-hmm. Plus, it doesn't bring the person back in a very good state.
Yeah.
Depending on your level in protection prayers, your target skills are disabled for a certain amount of time.
Right. And regardless of your prot, they come back at 25% health and zero energy, so they're basically useless for the first little while their energy charges back up. And if you use it on a ranger, they're worthless the whole time they're alive.
Whatever.
Had to get that in.
Now, do you ever bring multiple rezes?
Why? Do you have an assassin in your party? I usually bring Resurrection Chant when I'm bonding.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, on the same skill bar, do you ever do that? Because I've heard of people doing that. I don't really do it myself, but I know people do it so that they'll have, in certain situations, they can use a different res. But I just think that might be a little bit of overkill.
Yeah, I need the slots.
Yeah, yeah.
For other, there's a lot better uses than two reses.
Mm-hmm.
I like Restore Life, too. That's a pretty good res,
mm-hmm.
even when you're bonding, because it brings them back with a decent amount of energy. I figure it's more important to get them back with energy than with health, because it's a lot easier for the monk to get their health back up than it is for a blood necro, if you even have one, to get their energy back up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what about the
personal preference thing?
The things like Unyielding Aura and Vengeance, I guess, to a, to a lesser degree. Do you ever use things like that?
I don't ever use Unyielding Aura, just because it's an elite.
Yeah.
And, I mean, using an elite for res just seems crazy
yeah,
to me.
Yeah.
But occasionally I'll take Vengeance if it seems like we're going to have a lot of people die in a whole lot for a real long fight. I have taken it before.
Mm-hmm.
I bring Vengeance on if Monk is my secondary sometimes, because I can, like, res in the middle of battle and it doesn't take away the Monk's time. But
yeah. And then after the battle's done, then the Monk can go ahead and res him after they die from when Vengeance expires.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, I thought of a time that I carried two reses. When I would go to UW with a noob 55, I would take Rebirth and Vengeance. And I would use Rebirth to pull them away from the attacks or smites. And then I would use Vengeance so that they would actually res and they could change their armor and stuff. And then I would rebirth them for real once they didn't have low health. And then we'd wash, rinse, repeat.
Ah, okay. Makes sense.
And when I'm bonding, I usually bring Life Barrier as my elite, and I cast that before Life Bond.
Yeah, that can be good when there's, like, really, really heavy damage, like Realm of Torment with the Rain of Fire. In Gwen, I haven't even been taking res a lot of the time, because all the missions have res shrines, and it's not like the traditional missions where if you die, it's over and you have to restart.
Yeah, yeah.
So, mostly I go with guild teams or alliance teams that all the players are pretty good and I know them. So if I know the group is good and we have a couple sigs on some of the tanks or the ellies or whatever, then I'm not real concerned about it because we don't have that many deaths. So it's nice having that eighth slot for something other than a res to help keep the party going.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about that.
It's from PvP. I changed my playing style a lot because of PvP since I started doing that a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So monks never carry res there, and that just kind of carried over. That also what got me all appreciating Perot a whole lot more, because there's so much heavy damage that you just can't out-heal it.
Yeah, yeah, especially with, like, the spike damage in PvP.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Actually, I've been running some crazy prop builds in Gwen, just half goofing around, half for fun, because, believe it or not, Menlo is really, really good in Gwen with his Light of Deliverance spam, and he also has hex removal.
Ah, yeah.
So a lot of times I will take Glyph of Renewal and Aegis so that basically every 10 seconds Aegis is recharged and I can just do Aegis spam. And then with me having 50% of the hits missing and Menlo spamming LOD, that's plenty. And then I'll throw like Prot Spirit and Shield of Absorption on the bar also. So if someone does happen to take heavy damage, then I'll just put Prot Spirit on him and then Shield of Absorb, and they're pretty much taking no damage after a few seconds. And then Menlo just spams away to keep him good.
Who'd have thought that Menlo would be useful for something?
Dude, he needs a nerf because he's way overpowered.
Don't say that.
Menlo's awesome.
His prowess with the healing finally caught up with his prowess with the ladies.
Sometimes when I'm running Pride, I'll bring Spellbreaker as my elite. That one's not a prot skill, it's Divine Favor, but it kind of goes along perfectly with protection.
Yeah, Spellbreaker's good. It can do really good, like when you put it on the tank when they go into aggro a bunch of casters.
Mm-hmm.
Nice in UW, too. Chaos Planes, especially.
Oh, okay. I've used it a lot in, like, DOA, because there's, a bunch of, like, LEs and stuff that'll hit really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yep, same idea. Big mobs of casters, and you gotta protect the tank. The thing I really like about Gwen skills in general, even though, I mean, the Cure Hex in particular is really good because you get a massive heal also with the hex removal. So it's replaced Holy Veil in a lot of bars. You don't get to pre-prot them to slow down the hex coming on, but that big heal you get from it is really nice.
I like that. It's Healing Prayers, right?
Mm-hmm. That was one in general. Who do I get it from? Oh, if you want to know where Rory got it, that would be from copying my bar.
it's from the guy in the Eye of the North.
In Eye of the North. Oh,
Micah
okay.
Ferguson.
What town?
Eye of the North.
Eye of the North.
Oh, nice. There is a town called that.
It's like who's on first.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cool skill, but the other cool thing they did in general was the heal line now has hex and condition removal with the spotless mind and the spotless soul.
Oh, yeah.
They're not ideal, but they're still kind of cool that you don't have to diversify your attributes as much, and you can still just concentrate purely on healing and have some means to deal with conditions and hex fairly effectively.
Yeah, because before I would just bring, like, remove hex and, you know, it doesn't do anything special.
Mm-hmm. The remove hex is pretty, well, not pretty cool, but it's a lot better now that they lowered the cast time to 1 second from 2 seconds. That's a pretty good buff on that one. So I used to carry it a lot, and then when I still carry it when I'm all prop-based, but when I'm heal-based, I go with Cure Hex. And then the Spotless Mind and the Spotless Soul, whichever one of those two does conditions, that's really cool for the Spider Cave info, where they basically are putting poison on the person as fast as it gets removed. So when you put that on them, they get, you know, like, poison removed 3 times in 10 or 15 seconds, so that's pretty cool.
That one's Spotless Soul.
And that removes a condition every 3 seconds?
For if you're maxed out every 12, for 12 seconds, it removes a condition every 3 seconds. It's only 5 energy, too.
Nice.
Well, unless you have higher healing powers than 12.
The other one, the Spotless Mind that removes the hex, I was reading on Wiki that when it ends, it removes a hex even if the 5 or 6 seconds hasn't gone by. So if you have it set to last 11 seconds, which I think is 11 healing, you'll get a hex removal at 5 seconds, a hex removal at 10 seconds, and then another hex removal at the 11th second when the spell ends. So I don't know if that's a glitch or by design, but it's pretty cool. But yeah, as far as the Gwen skills go, the only one I really use a lot is Cure Hex. The other ones are kind of, they're okay, but they're not revolutionary.
Do you have any secrets you want to reveal? The Loudon farming secret.
Well, I know that Sean farms Bizier's Benediction since I bought 6 from him.
I probably have about 6 more.
Yeah. Why did you buy all those?
I put them on all my heroes.
I see.
Because they're all divine favor, so I put them on, and they have plus 30 health, so it makes them last a little longer.
Yeah, I put that Xerxo's Will on all my Ellies because it's got plus 60 health and it's pretty easy to farm. So that 60 health is a lot. That's a good segue to farming. Actually, that guy's a really easy farm for a boss farm. Because really there's like the two camps of farming, where it's just general mob farming, where you try to kill as much as you can for the drops, or boss farming, where you try to kill a specific boss to get his green. And I've totally changed directions on the way I go. I used to just mob farm all the time.
But it's like not really worth it anymore, because you don't get as much just regular white items that drop.
Yep, the loot scaling totally changed.
That was great because you didn't have to deal with selling to other people and, you know, you could just, like, merch all your stuff and you would just accumulate money.
But the thing that really hurt about that is the crafting materials.
Yeah.
For example, with the Moa quest, going out and getting 5 bog scale fins or the harpy wings and stuff, you're out there forever, where it used to be you could just go out there and plow through a couple mobs and you'd have everything you needed.
Mm-hmm. So when you farm those, it's like, I was maybe leaving my henchies somewhere and just taking, or leaving the my heroes somewhere and just taking my henchies so that we had less people. But does it really not even matter? You just take a full party and the loot's going to be the same?
They will get their percentage, like when you pick up a, 100 gold coins. Or let's say 800 gold coins, because I'm too lazy to do math. If you have a party of 8 and you pick up 800 gold coins, everyone gets 100 gold coins, no matter where they are on the map.
Okay.
But if you look at the party list and they're gray because they're out of range, that means they're not eligible for a specific drop. So when you kill something, only the people that are white in the party list are eligible to get the drop.
Yeah, so... like, if you're going to go out and collect bog scale fins, is it going to matter whether you bring 4 people or 8?
Yes, you would be half as likely to get the drop. Because any drop could go to any one of X, however many are eligible.
Alright, so I wasn't wasting my time by bringing less people with me then.
Yeah. Actually, I don't think it matters. Because with loot scaling, the chances...
Right.
Shouldn't go up or down. So for material farming, you might as well go kill with 8 people, because they're they're affected by loot scaling. But if you're going to try to kill a boss, then you want as few people there as you can, because the green is not scaled. So every time there's another person there, there's less chance that you'll get the drop.
Yeah, okay. So the kind of farming that I was trying to do, I was trying to get collector items. I might as well have just brought my full party with me and got through it faster.
Yes. And ideally, in that kind of situation, it's best to go with real people, and then you can, pool your resources, and once someone gets their 5, then they can give their extras to you, and if you're with cool people.
Okay, I'll make sure
I'm
don't
need any.
Our insults just kind of overlaid each other and
canceling each other out.
We're on the same page.
Yeah, I know a lot of people, I've done this myself, especially the Totemax run. Since it's such a long run and you're going through so many different little mobs here and there, and before you actually get to the behemoths, you bring a full party, and then once you kill everything around it, including the life pods, and then you send all the heroes and henchies to the other end of the map till they turn gray, then you kill the behemoth and hope he drops the Totemax.
Yeah, I do that a lot with bosses that are either hard to get to or have big mobs with them. I'll go in with everybody and kill all the stuff around the boss and leave just the boss, and then clear out the whole party. And then go back in and solo the boss once the heroes and henchies are out of range.
It kind of works pretty well, too, with when you have a minion master and you have a bunch of minions. Because you can send the minion master away, but the minions will stay there.
Yeah, that's really good for it distracts the boss so that he doesn't chase while you and the heroes are clearing out. You just want to make sure that there aren't so many minions or that the boss is so weak that they actually kill him.
Yeah. There's a couple new... there's one new spell, the Ebon Assassin... What do you call that? The Ebon Vanguard skill, where you have the assassin backup. You can send him forward to kind of act as a temporary tank. I think it only lasts... Well, I'm only rank 3 right now, so it only lasts like 11 seconds. But I use that a lot. And I guess you could use it in that same situation where you can send him forward and he won't count as a percentage for the drop percentage because he's just a entity, I guess.
Oh, that's pretty...
That's creepy.
Why?
That must be a powerful spell if it's an assassin that can stay alive for 11 seconds. Okay, well, favorite area, I really like doing the Gates of Kryta in hard mode. And that basically is just smiting, because smiting does double damage to the undead, and that's all undead. So that's pretty much just run in, aggro, use Shield of Absorption and Shielding Hands to keep yourself alive, and use SOJ as much as you can, and it eats them up pretty quick. You get a lot of dead bows and things like that in that mission. You don't make a whole lot of money off of the weapons themselves because it's all pretty common, but you'll get a lot of, or I've seen a lot of, like, plus 30 health mods that are still pretty valuable, and then also, like, 20-20 Sundering, 20% Enchant, some of those other mods that are desirable, so the money there is off of selling the mods that you get on the gold weapons that drop. And you get a ton of tomes, which, you know, you make a decent amount on those. There's only one boss in that run, though, so that's kind of a downside. And then just recently, using the same build, it's actually a Monk Dervish build. I guess I could go over a little more detail of these skills. So yeah, it's basically a Monk Dervish build, and it's all Monk protection and smiting with the one Dervish skill is Mystic Regen for your health regen, because it's plus 3 health regeneration per enchant, and you usually have 3 to 5 enchants on you at any given time. That's what Jake thinks of the build. Okay, so let's see here. So anyways, Gate of Kryta is cool, but lately I started farming outside of Jochner Diggings. It's called First City, I think. Farming that in hard mode is pretty cool because it's the same build. It's primarily all undead. You have to run a little ways and get inside the fortress there to where the undead are, but once you're in there, it's comparable to the Gate of Kryta farm, except there are two bosses, and the undead there drop inscribable weapons, and there's also chances for dead swords. So there's a just better upside to the kind of drops you get there.
Those dead swords with that skin that they have, they sell for a lot, don't they? Just because of that skin?
They do, and I don't know why, because I think they're ugly, but yeah, when you get a good one, a gold, like, Rec 9, they sell high.
Yeah, they're coming down a little bit because they're farmed pretty heavily, but still, it's a decent amount. You have a better potential for a high dollar drop from the First City farm than you do from the Gates of Kryta farm. But they're both really cool, fun.
But even so, just selling mods is, I find, easier because people are always looking for those. You don't necessarily... It's kind of harder to find a buyer for a special rare skin as opposed to a mod that more people will want.
Yeah. I mean, as far as selling goes, I never sell. But if I was going to sell, I would not stand in town and spam. I would totally get a Guru auction or a GW Online because it's so much easier. Mm-hmm. The people come to you then.
Gildorf needs an auction house.
Wow. Seems like someone would have suggested that by now.
But, you know, even selling things, like, I was doing a trade with Sean and buying stuff, but we're, like, not online at the same time. So we resorted to using a middleman, and I gave money to Junk, and then he gave the items to Junk, and then we swapped them because he was on at the same time. But I was like, there needs to be, like, some kind of way to deliver items to somebody that's not online at the same time as you.
Lord of the Rings has that, don't they, with the mail system?
get
but
it mail.
You can't do items like that?
No, you can sell. Okay. You can send items like that. Guild Wars doesn't have that, though.
So I'd throw in a little plug there for Lord of the Rings Online.
Is that game
you know,
good?
I hear, but they have this podcast. It's just amazing. And that's what I hear. I don't know.
They also have a, I believe it's a cash on delivery system. So you can send an item, and if the person can't retrieve it unless they send money back.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. But when I use like RPG Traders, I have in my profile, I say what time I'm usually online, you know, for logistic purposes, because it's like, I don't want somebody who, you know, lives in another part of the country or whatever, and they say, like, you're never online. I get that a lot. Somebody will see me on the weekend and say, you're never online. I'm online every night, right? And it's just because, like, they're on, like, four hours earlier than I am. But I always do that when I'm trading, is I, you know, say what time I'm online, and then people usually take a look at that. And I have had pretty good luck with that. People usually try to make themselves available for the trades. But nowadays, I don't really do a lot of solo farming. I'll just, like, go out in Nightfall and do some random quests or whatever, and a lot of stuff just drops, and it accumulates really fast. You can just go out for a little short little bit, and you get, like, a few K here
and
there.
Yeah, it seems like the more recent chapters, and now with Gwen, you just make a lot more money more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're just as well off playing as you are trying to mob farm, if gold is all you're after. Farming has become more for going after a specific item.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what they were going for with the loot scaling and all that.
Yeah, it's funny, because you see all those posts on the forums now. It's like, how do I make money fast? Well, you play.
Yeah.
The fastest way to make money is just to play.
Which I think is really good that they've changed that, so it's like, you don't have to resort to farming. But, you know, in this game, there really are no major money sinks. You don't have to buy anything expensive. Yeah. Unless you, like, do something crazy, like try to accumulate 10,000 sugar points or something, you know?
All right, so how about cool farming skills? The main farming skills that I use are Shield of Judgment in the Smite line for monks, which is good for mob farming. And then for boss farming, if it's a boss that has a whole bunch of mobs around him, then Sliver Armor from the Earth line of Elementalist is really good, because you do damage every time you take damage. And then for not as much aggro around Spoil Victor from the Bloodline in Necros is awesome. Because the person who has that on them takes 80 or so damage, 80 to 90, depending on your blood, every time they attack. And as long as they have more health than you. So when you're doing it as a 55, they're pretty much taking damage constantly.
Everything has more damage or more health than you.
Yep. So I'd say 9 times out of 10, I run a Spoil Victor build with also that Necrosis skill. From the it's a Sunspear skill. When you have high Sunspear rank, that thing's awesome. Does like 90 damage a pop with maxed Sunspear to any target that's cursed. So you put Spoil Victor on them, you let them beat on you until they're below 55 health and stop taking damage, and then you just hit them with Necrosis and they die. And then as far as keeping yourself alive, basically you put Prot Spirit on yourself, and then you can either try to brute force out heal them with Healing Breeze, or if you have the Derv secondary with Mystic Regeneration, something like that, where basically you think your buffed up regen and health is enough to counter the damage, or you can totally negate damage with Shield of Absorption or Shielding Hands, where basically they stop you from taking any damage at all. And they both have their pros and cons. Healing Breeze, Mystic Regen kind of thing is great when there's degen, and you actually have to counter negative pips in health with positive pips in health. Because if you're running a Shield of Absorb or Shielding Hands where you're just negating damage but don't have any...
bleeding.
Exactly. Yeah, you can just bleed out. Or fire. Fire is brutal when you're burning. Yeah,
that's why I usually prefer bringing some kind of healing enchantment.
Mm-hmm. So the good side to the prot line, like the Shield of Absorb, is you can tank an unlimited number of bad guys, because it doesn't matter if there's one guy or 100 guys pounding on you when you're taking zero damage per hit.
True.
As long as they're not going to make you bleed or light you on fire or whatever other bad kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's a totally technical description. Bad kind of stuff.
But using that's why you can tank so many more smites than I can in UW.
Yes, totally, because there is... Well, once we get by the cows, there's no degen.
Mm-hmm.
And usually if it's just bleeding, you can just use Divine Favor healing to get through it. You know, bleeding is so slow. I think it's -3 pips degen. So if you just spam Prot Spirit or one of your other skills on your bar, the Divine Favor healing counters the degen. But if you're up against fire,
poison,
or something like that, multiple types of degen, And, you know, some of the ranger bosses or the... mostly rangers are the worst for conditions, where they can stack burning and poison and everything else bleeding on you. It can be pretty bad. So there's actually a couple heals where you have to split your... Or a couple heals. A couple of farms where you have to split your attributes and have points in protection as well as healing, so that you can have the Shield of Absorb to negate the damage, but also a healing breeze or a watchful healing, something like that, to counter the degen. The main one for that is farming the djinns in the Hidden City, because they got those dervish djinns that beat the heck out of you, so you need the damage negation, but then they also have those ruby djinns that have fire, so if you don't have health regen, they're going to get you too.
So as far as farming bosses, who would you say are your favorites?
Let's see. The Scar Eater is pretty easy and fun farm when the Oni don't pop up. That although that's pretty much over farmed and that staff isn't worth that much, but it's still really good for your heroes. And then I also farm mostly, to tell you the truth, I do Gates of Kryta or the First City a lot more than I boss farm. I usually only go after bosses when I need a specific green for a friend or a hero or whatever, because I don't have the patience to sell them. So greens are just kind of like, if I don't have a use for it, then why do I want it?
Yeah, I don't green farm at all anymore.
You like those team green farms anyways, which isn't real farming. That's a crutch.
It's awesome. That's why my farming builds are all like, okay, DOA, HB, monk, you know.
So, I was thinking of one thing I wanted to say about farming was smart casting and energy management. For example, in the Gates of Kryta farm, there's a lot of times where you're just taking on three guys. And since you don't have Blessed Signet in that build, a lot of times if you don't have high energy at the end, you got to stand around forever and wait for it to recharge. So a lot of times you want to spam Prot Spirit or Healing Breeze or whatever you're using to protect yourself, even before it needs to be renewed, in anticipation of the mobs dying. Because while they're attacking you, they're obviously recharging your energy because of Essence Bond and Valth Spirit. So basically you want to time... Well, what I try to do is I try to time and cast Prot Spirit so I think it will be running out right after they die. And that way the 10 energy for the cast gets built back up while they're... Mm-hmm. pounding on me and dying, instead of waiting for it to run out 2 seconds before they die, and then I recast it, they hit me once more and they're dead, and then I have to stand around waiting for the energy to slowly regen, because my pips are low because of the maintained enchants.
That makes sense.
So that was my one actual farming insight.
First time for everything.
Still waiting on that first time for you to say something funny.
Shut up.
Nice. Shut up, this. The ultimate comeback. There is no counter. All right, so now we talk about how great I am and call it a show, right?
See you, everyone.
And then?
You want to just keep on talking?
And then?
I should turn on Guild Wars so I know what I'm talking about. Hey, I gotta go AFK for a couple minutes, okay?
Okay.
Show quality just increased 33%.
When somebody loses, do you go back to PvE, noobs?
I'm furry now.
You're a furry?
It's true. His monk has, like, fuzzy stuff all over him.
That's weird. I want to get the bandana so I can look like Bret Michaels and Axl Rose. Put your arms around me, baby, and protect me.
Will you take my hand? And then...